Your job is to essentially figure out what works. And it, like I said before, the same tactic may not work on different apps. So be very flexible. Don't believe you have all the answers, and learn as you test and learn as you go.
Welcome to Mobile Growth and Pancakes, a podcast by Stormhaven. We break down how and why mobile apps grow. In each episode, we invite a mobile growth expert onto the show to break down a specific mobile growth strategy, how it worked, why it worked, and what they would do differently. I'm your host, Esther Schatz. Okay, welcome to Mobile Growth and Pancakes. I'm joined today by Jeff Perkins, who's CMO of Park Mobile. And Jeff, before you tell me why I suck at marketing, do you want to introduce yourself quickly and give a little bit of your background?
Of course. And I would never say anyone sucks at marketing other than myself at times. I'm Jeff Perkins. I am the Chief Marketing Officer and Head of Product at a company called Park Mobile. For those who don't know, Park Mobile is the number one app for parking in North America. So we have about 25 million users. We're available in 450 plus cities. You could really use the app to pay almost anywhere you go for parking, either on-street parking or even making a reservation for a sporting event. And we've had a really great track record of growth over the last couple of years. The company started in 2008, and it just every year we're growing really fast. So it's been a really, really fun ride.
Amazing. And you're writing a book that I believe is set to come out this year, right? Called How Not to Suck at Marketing.
Yes, they're telling me August, but this is my first book, so I'm learning in the publishing world. Sometimes August doesn't mean August, but hopefully it's going to be August because I've written it and it's kind of in someone else's hands at this point for the editing process. But I wrote this book over a couple of years, and I finally, really in 2020 during COVID, had a little bit of time to really sit down and focus and get it kind of packaged together. But the idea of it is that, marketing as a profession is very hard in a lot of ways. It's always changing and evolving, and you really have to be very nimble to kind of keep up. And the expectations on marketers today is generally very high versus what many marketers deliver. And so, I kind of say that this book is really sort of a survival's guide for the modern marketer, and how do you do your job, do it well, and try to avoid getting fired. So it'll come out soon. The reason I called it How Not to Suck at Marketing is that I went to I was speaking at a conference. This was several years back. And it was one of these conferences that has like multiple sessions going on at the same time. And so, the key is to have like a catchy title for your session. And so I thought it'd be fun to have a session at this marketing conference called How Not to Suck at Marketing. And so that's kind of what I went with. And when I got to the room where I was going to present, I got there about 15 minutes early, and it was like standing room only already. And that wasn't because anyone knew who I was. Just everybody was like really interested in this title, How Not to Suck at Marketing. Because I think for marketers, oftentimes we all kind of are like, oh my gosh, I am totally screwing this up, or I'm totally not good enough. And, I think I've learned a lot of lessons the hard way in my career. And I hope that other marketers can learn from my mistakes.
Well, not to get too meta, but it sounds like given that you knew how to market your session on marketing pretty well and take the title that works and turn it into a book, I mean, I think it's probably a good start. When we look specifically at the world of mobile, I mean, even since I assume a lot of, the bulk of your writing took place, there have been a lot of changes. iOS 14.5, we knew it was coming, but there's been a lot of repercussions of that. It feels like every few months we get kind of a tidal wave of something new, something different, something's happening. How do you kind of look at marketing in such a structure as, it's not the best practices frozen in time. It's not the best practices for this given moment. How do you take something like that and make sure that you're using principles that last beyond just the limits of the time period you're in?
Yeah. So the way I think about that is if a mobile operating system release can wreck your business, you don't really have a business. I mean that if something like if a Google algorithm can change your business fundamentally, you really have to look at the core fundamentals of your business and realize that your business may be not as strong as you think it is in some ways. And that's a hard thing for a lot of companies to look at. But, you know, at Park Mobile, we're a company that in many ways, location services are very important. And, you know, because we believe it creates a better user experience. But at the same time, we also recognize not everyone's going to want Park Mobile to know where they are. And so, we kind of always default to doing what's best for the consumer. And if the consumer wants to be anonymous, we'll let the consumer be anonymous. But we do try to educate the consumer on the value of your location services being on and letting us kind of at least know where you are, because it then will surface the most relevant parking options for you. So, the way we look at it is it's really up to the consumer though. If the consumer wants to be more anonymous in their journey, we will enable that. If they want to have their location services on, we think it creates a little bit of a better experience, we'll enable that. We recently actually changed, we added an option, because one of the things we saw with consumers today is that they don't like to be locked into kind of a binary choice in any way, right? So in the industry we operate in, the parking industry, for many years, your only choice was to pay at a parking meter, right? Nobody wanted to pay at a parking meter. It was a horrible experience. You have to get coins. And so then they said, well, now you can pay at a parking meter or you can pay on an app. So we have an option for you at least. And then people said, well, why do I only have to pay on an app or a meter? I want more options. Why do I have to create an account, you know, if I want to pay for parking? Can I do a guest checkout? And so really what that shows you is that consumers essentially are never satisfied with whatever the option is out there. And so as people that are building products, you have to realize that and say, all right, whatever need we're going to meet today, there's going to be another big need 6 months down the road that we're going to have to meet. And it's that kind of Maslow's hierarchy of needs architecture that a lot of us talk about. And it's hard because consumers are never satisfied. But if you have a philosophy that you have to constantly meet consumers where they are, that will serve you very well. So we had a lot of consumers not wanting to download a full-featured mobile app and set up an account to pay for parking. And if you think about it, that makes a lot of sense, because I don't go into the city that often. I don't pay for parking that often. Why do I have to download another app to my phone? Why do I have to give Park Mobile all my information to just pay for parking? And it's like $2 for the hour I need to park. And that's a very, very rational thing to think if you're a consumer. So we created a lightweight web app in addition to our full-featured mobile app. So in our lightweight web app, someone can go in quickly. They don't have to download the Park Mobile app, pay for parking quickly. They can check out as a guest, so they don't have to even create an account. And so that's just a great example of always trying to meet consumers where they are, because you can't wait for consumers always to come to you. You have to kind of go to them and make sure you understand their needs and wants, and that you're developing a product roadmap that's going to meet those needs over time.
So how do you strike the balance between, I mean, I think definitely there's a lot to relate to in meeting. I'm thinking about myself now. When I travel in the US, I definitely don't want an app that I'm going to keep because I'm there for 2 minutes and park on my phone. So it makes total sense. And it sounds like the kind of thing that would work. But I mean, I'm trying to think example vaguely in my mind, probably on Silicon Valley, of when you give your users full say, you know, they're telling you the things that they want to see. Sometimes they're off, you know, sometimes users have this, you know, what they want to see isn't actually an experience that makes sense for them. How do you balance having a roadmap that kind of is in line with the product that you know is important and that you have the vision for, with meeting your users at what they're telling you? You know, where's the cutoff? How much can you kind of plan from a product vision perspective on your end versus being totally user responsive?
Yeah, well, I think you have to look at the user research directionally all the time. You can't let your users dictate your roadmap, because users aren't experts in parking apps, like we're experts in parking apps. So we do know that we have a certain amount of expertise that the user doesn't have. And it's that expertise that's really going to drive not just what we do today, but what we're doing in 3 to 5 years as we see, you know, fundamental shifts in the industry. Like one example, something that a consumer is not asking for now, but we're building towards is around the autonomous vehicle. So we know in 5 years, you're going to have a lot of self-driving cars on the road. So we're spending a lot of time and energy now building technology that will enable those autonomous vehicles to pay for parking, to like lift a gate at a garage, even when there's not a person there to pull a ticket, and to be able to transact for different services when the car is in a garage. So if there's a autonomous car, it's still going to have to probably get cleaned, get serviced at some point. While it's out taking people from point A to point B. And we're spending a lot of cycles now thinking through what that looks like in the future and how Park Mobile can be a part of that. And again, that's not something a consumer is asking for in any way today.
Not a burning need. Right? Yeah, definitely not.
You know, as a technology company, you know that if you're not working towards that future vision, somebody else is, and if you're not a part of it, you will get left behind in many ways. So a lot of what we do is focus on what's coming next and how do we keep up with what's coming next, but at the same time, you know, staying very close to our consumers on things that they want to see in the app that we can address now. So the mobile web app was one example. And we're always looking at things like that, that make the consumer experience a little nicer, a little better, a little more seamless. So you have to balance. You don't want to go all one way or all the other. But I, you know, as a marketer who kind of leads a product function, I do kind of lean very heavily on listening to the consumers, making sure that our app today is meeting their needs as best as we can, and then using a lot of that research and insight to drive, you know, features into our roadmap. You know, a consumer is not going to give you the idea that's going to be your next big thing, but they will give you the inputs that are going to help you make the app a lot better around the margins. But that's really important. You know, we get, you know, in a day, we'll have anywhere from 15 to 20,000 to sometimes on a weekend, like on a Saturday, we get 40,000 people downloading our app. And we convert almost 90% of them into a paid transaction, which is really good.
Wow. There are some very jealous listeners right now at that stat, I think.
A lot of mobile apps are very envious of that, but you also have to look at our app, which is really a utility. Right? If you have to park, you kind of have to use our app. So we look at that, but then we still look at that 10%. We say, what's going on with this 10% that are not doing a transaction? Sometimes there's an issue in the user experience getting them signed up. Sometimes there's something confusing in the flow for them. You know, in some cases, they realize, oh, I really don't want a mobile app. I'm just going to pay at the meter. So it's looking at that, because if we could just convert with 40,000 people in one day downloading the app, you convert 1% of those who previously weren't going to use the app into a user over a course of a year, that really adds up to a lot of revenue. And so we're always looking at those things where we could improve the user experience, make it more seamless, and try to, you know, convert, you know, that small number of people who don't convert into a parker, trying to get them to take that next step. So that's a big part of what our product team does is, you know, just like what are the areas that are just you know, becoming bottlenecks for people. But then the other side of that is also the people who pay once and never come back. And how do we get those people back and make sure that they're paying more options? Then you have the people who they were using the app and then we lost them. And why did we lose them? So you're always looking at that because, you know, if you're only looking at the acquisition side of it and just, patting yourself on the back because you acquired 40,000 users in a day, you're realizing there are a lot of leaks in that bucket that you need to patch along the way as well to make sure you're actually retaining those users.
So let's talk about marketing's role in that process, because you, I think in a lot of cases you end up, I mean, it's a you guys have the benefit of having, you know, somebody who's managing marketing, who's also managing this product side and kind of creating that funnel. But in general, I think there's a lot of cases where you fall into, you know, marketing's job is to bring the user in, and then product's job is to take the user the rest of the way, which is probably a pretty dated way of looking at it, right? How does marketing tie into this process of, you know, looking at specifically answering consumer needs, answering these consumer desires in a way that is bringing you in those 40,000 users, but also still working on, you know, not losing them, not having that churn, on retaining them?
Yeah, so we spend a lot of time really trying to understand the kind of those points where people will churn. And we just are constantly doing research with our users. And, you know, one thing we found, which was a really big point when people don't come back to the app, was around expired credit cards. So your credit card is expiring, and you just don't put in a new credit card, it becomes inconvenient. And so the marketing team started a email campaign prior to the credit card expiring. And you know, with a audience as big as ours, you know, we have thousands of people every day their credit cards are expiring in our system. And that's a big high probability that those users will churn, and we may not see them back ever. And so we just started messaging to people, hey, your credit card's expiring, your credit card's about to expire, last chance, make sure you update your credit card. And it was amazing how many people then went in the system and updated their credit card in the app, just by doing that kind of gentle nudge, getting people to get their credit card updated. And so we are lowering the probability that those people are going to churn and we're going to lose them. And so it's those kind of things, just studying all those breakpoints in the app experience where you have a chance of losing someone, and making sure you're doing everything you can to eliminate that issue. And the other thing we see is we get people that download the app, set up an account, and they either don't add their license plate number because maybe they're not in front of their car, or they don't add a payment method. And so if they don't do either of those things, they're never going to do a transaction. And so once they've set up an account, now we have their information. So then we have different marketing campaigns that really kick in to try to get them to put their credit card in, to try to get them to put their license plate number in. And again, it's all designed around knowing that they can't proceed to convert into a real user unless we get those pieces of information. So getting those gentle nudges in place. So we're saying, hey, you get your account started, you're ready to go. These are the pieces of information we need so you can get parking. So it's really those things that that I think really prevent the churn from happening. And then there's just broader education. You know, when people download the app, it's usually at the point of purchase. So you park, you see Park Mobile is accepted, you say, oh, I'd rather pay on an app than at this clunky meter, and I'm going to download the app, set up an account, and pay. But what you probably don't know is that in addition to the location where you're paying, the probability is we're also available in the city next to the city where you're paying. And we're available maybe at the sporting arena or at the college or university down the street. So there's a lot of education that we have to do on all the places where you can use Park Mobile. And we use things like geofencing. So as people have the app on their phone, we could alert them, hey, you just went from Washington, D.C. to Philadelphia. We're also accepting Philadelphia. So when you enter the city, you know, oh, cool, I could use Park Mobile here. And it's a very helpful way to be a bit intrusive with your app experience. One thing we know is that I can't just do push messages all day to Park Mobile users. They're just gonna, they'll get super annoyed. They'll hate tweet us. You know, that we have kind of a very specific role in their lives, which is I use Park Mobile to pay for parking. So don't send me anything that's not related to parking. So we kind of have a rule with our team where any communication that goes to the user, it really has to help kind of with their mobility journey. So it's not just reminding them how much we like them as our customers. It's, hey, this is information that's going to help you find parking, get parked faster, and have a better experience when you're on the go.
That's I actually just had the most annoying push notification day, so I relate. I think, you know, I'm curious where within Park Mobile, and, you know, maybe you can talk also about how you wish it was ideally, but sounds like you have a lot of signals. You know, there's analytics in place to tell you this is something that's going to increase likelihood of churn. This is something that's going to, you know, block users from coming. Who owns those analytics? Whose job is it to kind of sit and say, I'm finding, you know, I'm finding these moments. Let's figure, somebody has to tackle this. Should it sit within marketing? Should it sit within product? Is it an analytic team, a data science team?
Yeah, so we have an analytics team that looks at a lot of those things. But it, the people that I think really focus on finding the insights are the you know, the product managers who own these products, right? So if you are the product manager on the ParkMobile app or the ParkMobile web app, that's a core part of your job, is figuring out what's working, what's not working. And if something's not working, you know, creating a solution to fix it and getting that on the roadmap. And so it's a really collaborative process actually between the product team and our analytics group to study what's going on in the app. You know, and so what we look for in our product managers are people who are very intellectually curious. And really, I think in an organization, you hope everybody is like that. But you really want that in your product managers. Because, you know, a good product manager should always be asking, well, what if this, what if that, to try to figure out how do we make the app as good as it can be? How do we, you know, what, you know, figuring out, all right, what is our goal of the app? Our goal is to get people to pay for parking over and do that multiple times, you know, and so you drive up the lifetime value of that user. And anything that prevents that is really bad. And so the good product managers really have to focus on, you know, how do we get them in the app, signed up, using the app, retained over time. And the expectation is that if that's your job, you are deep in the weeds of the analytics around that and trying to figure out, okay, what are the things we need to do to improve? Even if it's a little thing, sometimes it makes a big difference. How do we improve conversions at every step of the way? How do we reduce churn at every step of the way? And that's really the big focus. That's the big focus for us. And we have, we're fortunate because we have great tool sets that enable us to look at our web data, that enable us to look at our app data. We use a tool called Braze, you know, kind of sits behind the app, and that's what we use for all of our engagement. And those tools really give us a lot of insight into what's happening and the levers we can pull to drive the behaviors that we want.
Have you ever been just horribly misled by your data? I mean, an example of a time where the analytics seemed to be telling you something, you went in place, you went all in, you tried to answer a solution, and it just completely backfired.
I don't know that I've been totally misled by the data, but I have underestimated often the time sometimes it takes to really make a change where you see a quantitative impact. You know, the marketer in me and the executive in me, you always want to see kind of a stimulus and a response, right? And you know, like, hey, we did this and this happened. But sometimes when you're working on a product, it's more of a slow burn. And you do things and over time it makes a big impact. But when you do it initially, you're like, oh, well, we improved our conversion by, you know, 0.001%, you know, week over week. But then you get 52 weeks later and you're like, wow, our conversion's actually up, you know, 10% now. So, you know, the thing that I think you have to look at when you're either in marketing or product is the sustained commitment to what you're doing over time. And there's not a lot of things you can do that are just these quick hits where you're going to see these immediate hockey sticks in your results. You hope there are those things, but for the most part, you know, like if you change components of your signup process, for example, you may not see that impact for a long time. But eventually, if you did it right and you really studied it and you did the right things and you tested it, you will see that impact over the long term. So that's kind of the view you have to have, is everything you're doing is not just a quick hit, but it's more of a very strategic, purposeful activity that'll improve your metrics, improve your business over the long term.
So I think that's something that's really challenging for a lot of marketers, because you're in an industry where we look at channels like Facebook and channels like UAC and Google that you are accustomed to these really rapid. I mean, this was part of that trauma of iOS 14.5 is I don't get to have my immediate metrics and my immediate, you know, ROAS and what's my return and what's my, you know, I think it's challenging to be able to get the budgets that you need to market for something long-term. How do you balance that? You know, how do you know that you're actually spending your quarterly or yearly budget in such a way that can lead to this long-term growth, which on some level has to rely on not the numbers right in front of you, but on these projected numbers?
Yeah, I mean, it's always going to be a challenge because, you know, marketing is part art and part science, right? And, you know, there's the stuff you can measure directly and the stuff you can measure indirectly. I think the, you know, taking a step back from just what your marketing budget is, I think it's important for marketers to really focus on building organizational credibility. I think that's a really important aspect of being a marketing leader that I think oftentimes is overlooked. Like when you start at a company, you'll always I'm going to take 30, 60, 90 days, you know, look at the landscape, understand what's going on, and then come up with my plan and then go execute. That's usually what most marketers do when they enter a company. And that's the right thing to do. But at the same time, you have to go in with your eyes wide open that, you know, executives are going to look at, your CEO is going to look at, your board's going to look at, they're going to look at you and say, hey, this is someone I expect to drive immediate results. And so the long-term view of marketing sometimes doesn't align with what your CEO wants or your CFO wants or your board wants. And so what I've always done when I start a new job and start getting ramped up is I look at, I try to figure out what I want to do longer term. And then I try to figure out what I can do very fast. And so, you know, a lot of times when I started at a company, I'll just go in and say like, oh, our collateral is all terrible. I'm just going to go update the collateral. I'm going to update our corporate brochures. And you would be amazed just by doing those little things, how people start to look at you and say, wow, in like 2 weeks, Jeff just updated all of our collateral and it's amazing, right? Oh, wow, Jeff just built 20 landing pages. Jeff just got this campaign off the ground. And you have to do these things very fast and take kind of a velocity approach, like getting a lot of stuff done quickly to show that you kind of know what you're doing. You're not screwing around and you're putting runs on the board essentially. And what you find is that in an organization where people see you as being someone who's highly effective at your job, oftentimes they will then give you the benefit of the doubt on the things that take longer. And they'll say, well, Jeff's really good at his job. Jeff's very competent. He's already done a lot of things. He clearly knows what he's doing. So we're going to let him test into the optimal, you know, marketing program for the company. And we're going to go in knowing that, you know, he's probably going to make some bets that are going to work out and he's going to make some bets that are not going to work out. And so you build the credibility, you set expectations around what it takes to really figure out, you know, the appropriate allocation of spend, and then you go at it. And you don't get too precious on any one marketing tactic. You say, you know, I've worked in a lot of companies in a lot of industries. And one thing I found is that some companies crushed it with like AdWords, Google, you know, paid search, crushed it. Other companies, paid search, you might as well have been throwing the money in the fireplace, right? You know, some companies, social media, crushing it. Other companies, social media, no one cares. And so you realize there's no playbook to this stuff. You have to kind of feel your way into what the optimal marketing plan for your company is. And that takes time. And the way to buy yourself that time is to show that you know what you're doing upfront. And build that credibility, and that'll serve you over the long term with your company.
I feel like this is excellent advice, not just in marketing, but maybe in kind of every aspect of life, which is essentially you're saying you have to find your quick hits, the things you know to do, the things you know will be helpful, the things that are kind of universal. This is, I've come in, I fix, I solve really quick. I get that credibility. I get to the point of, okay, he knows the quick wins. He's effective. So we trust him to now tell us, now guide us, instead of just kind of react, to be able to say, okay, look, I'm doing something in this scale, and we'll let you do it because we've seen you be effective. We've seen you hit those kind of, you know, if I'm at your quarterly review, I can kind of put a big check mark on things that you've done in that initial stage, without kind of jeopardizing that I guess you said organizational credibility, without it being, well, he's still here and I'm still not seeing any results. So why did we bring Jeff in the first place? I think that's it's really solid, kind of solid advice.
Yeah. I mean, the last thing you'd ever want to hear about, you know, a relatively new marketing person that was brought on board is someone who's not in the marketing function, but like someone in finance or the CEO is saying, what's that person doing all day? And that, I've heard that exact thing said. Like, if there's one piece of advice I would give to marketing leaders when they come in, don't come in and make your first initiative like ripping out the marketing automation tool and installing a new one. Don't make that your first project, because it's going to take 12 months. You're not going to show any results, and by the end of it, you'll probably be fired because it's a very time consuming thing. Like, that's something you do after you build that organizational credibility. People are like, oh, this guy knows what he's doing, and then you could take on those longer term projects. But if you do that, or you know, even like a rebranding is really hard. Maybe that's not the first thing you do. Like, you might walk into a company and hate the brand. Don't take that on first. Maybe take that on as your phase two of your plan. But get those runs on the board first to show that you kind of know what you're doing.
Yeah, I think you probably also minimize potential animosity in that way. Like, I've seen it also when somebody comes in and just wants to tear apart what everybody's been working on for X amount of time before they've kind of validated, I'm doing this for us and for our value and because I know what I'm doing, not just because I'm trying to copy paste what I've done previously and kind of pull it in. So I think, I'm interested also on the, I'd imagine you'd have a similar philosophy on the product side, right? Which is, you're coming in and you're not focused necessarily on, you know, let's say you're coming in fresh and kind of taking a leadership role on the product side, not ripping everything up to start with. What are some of the quicker wins in a product capacity that, that would be able to establish your credibility in the way that creating a ton of landing pages, redesign and collateral, you know, the kind of those more instant levels that you can take on from marketing?
Right. So product is, you know, I think the same rules could apply to product, where, you know, you want to go in, you want to study what's working in the app, what's not working in the app, really digging deep into consumer insights around the app, and then figure out, okay, here's my punch list of stuff that I think we should be doing. And you know, looking at that list and then saying, okay, these are the things that are going to take a long time. These are the things that we can do relatively quickly, and focusing on the quick wins first. You know, like, you don't want to go in as the product owner and just say, oh, we have to re-architect the entire thing. Like, just tear it down and rebuild. I mean, that's, and maybe you do have to do that, but that's a really big project. Whereas you can go in and say, hey, if we just add this button on the sign up screen, we might reduce our drop off from account conversion by like 5%. Do it, show the results, and build that credibility that, hey, we made this minor UX change and look what happened. And so those are the things, you know, just kind of doing those things. And to be honest, every product out there has like a million of those things in there, right? Like, you know, so don't get so enamored with the big picture, like, hey, we need to, you know, rip out the foundation and pour a new foundation. Maybe you need to do that over time, but figure out the things you can do now to build, you know, build your portfolio of wins.
it aligns nicely with what you say about meeting your user. Like if you look at it from you as a service provider to your user base, not just, you know, internally within the company, but if you're meeting your users where you are, it's not how do I redefine the world of parking for everyone who's coming in. It's how do I create instant satisfaction, you know, something that's maybe smaller, a light web app that just gets somebody in and gets them to pay and gets that foot in the door. And then they give me enough trust to let me actually start, you know, going deeper and taking my services further and giving them more from my offering when I've hit that kind of immediate fence of getting them that happy win and that quicker win.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
All right, Jeff, are you ready for the quick fire round?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. If you could give just one tip to an aspiring mobile growth marketer, what would it be?
One tip for an aspiring mobile growth marketer would be very flexible in your approach to your work. Meaning don't be so rigid that you can't constantly course correct, because your job is to essentially figure out what works. And like I said before, the same tactic may not work on different apps. So be very flexible. Don't believe you have all the answers, and learn as you test and learn as you go.
Favorite mobile growth resource?
Favorite mobile growth resource is my network of people that I talk to constantly. You could read everything you want to read online. The best resource you have is your network. So I always recommend to people, find other people in your industry. Take them to lunch, in a COVID world, have more Zoom calls with them. Because really that's where you're going to get your insights. So if, for example, we have, I talked before about Braze. So I talk a lot to other companies that use Braze on their mobile apps. And what are you doing? What's working for you? Here's what's working for us, and sharing those ideas and best practices. I think that your network is your biggest asset, whether you're trying to hire some new people for your team, whether you're trying to learn something new, whether you're trying to select a vendor. So my resource is my network.
Ties in very nicely with the next question, which is, let's assume we're post-COVID world. Who's the person in your network, in the growth industry, maybe somebody just outside of your network, who you'd most want to take for lunch, and why?
The person I would probably most like to take for lunch, and I keep talking about Braze in this, but they're a good partner for us. So Sarah Spivey is the CMO of Braze. And the reason I want to take her to lunch, one is she's super cool and really fun to talk to and really interesting. But two, I mean, unlike me, she sees what marketers are doing across like 100 different apps for their clients. So the good thing about that is that I could ask her, well, who's doing this well? And she'll point me to that person, and who's doing this well? And so she's kind of a great person to connect with that'll then help me solve my problem through her network. So like I said, she's super fun. So I she would be someone I would want to have lunch with when we're back to in-person type meetings.
Okay, most important question is, what is your favorite type of pancake?
Favorite type of pancake would be, so in Atlanta, there's a place here called Highland Bakery, and they have a pancake that's a sweet potato pancake that sounds like I say that, it would sound kind of gross, but it is the most amazing thing you've ever eaten. So the sweet potato pancakes from Highland Bakery, that's my favorite pancake.
Okay, I believe you only because we also have a place in Tel Aviv called Orna and Ella that makes sweet potato pancakes, and it is like they're known kind of like everywhere for these sweet potato pancakes. So I relate. I accept your answer.
I don't like sweet potatoes, but I love these sweet potato pancakes.
Even stronger push. Jeff, where can people find you if they want to hear more? I mean, see updates on when your book will be out. What's the best place to keep track of you?
Yeah, so people can connect with me on LinkedIn. Just look at Jeff Perkins Park Mobile on LinkedIn. My Twitter is Jeff Perkins, the number 8. So at Jeff Perkins 8. And everyone should check out the website, HowNotToSuckAtMarketing.com. And that's the website where you can get information about the book release. I also have on there a really good list of recommended marketing resources. And I have a marketing acronym glossary, because marketers love our acronyms, and we're one of the few functions, I think, few professions where a lot of marketers could actually talk incomplete sentences using only acronyms. So it's important you know all the acronyms, and I have a whole list of them on my website.
That's genius. I have to tell you, I never realized how many acronyms we use that are not relevant anywhere outside of marketing until we hire new people into the team. And you see the look on their face when you're saying them. They're just, what are you talking about? So kudos. I'll take a look and see what I'm missing there. Jeff, thank you so much for joining us and for sharing all these tips. This was amazing.
Thanks, Esther. It was great to be with you.
And that was Mobile Growth and Pancakes. Find out more about StoreMaven and how we can improve App Store performance, visit storemaven.com. And then make sure to search for Mobile Growth and Pancakes in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, or anywhere else podcasts are found, and click subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. On behalf of the team here at StoreMaven, thanks for listening.